216-578-0092, at GBush91 on Twitter, and we roll to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, and we go. And we talk to my man Greg Schwartz of the Bleacher Report. And how you doing tonight, Greg?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man, I appreciate you, man. I'm doing a little conversation about paying college athletes, the whole situation going down in California. If college players got paid off their likeness, how much do you think Zion Williamson would be worth last year?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, there's no reason why any college athlete should not be able to profit off of their likeness. That's absolutely ridiculous. They should be able to make money off jersey sales, autograph signings, any of that stuff. So the fact that they're not is complete ludicrous. Zion, he'd be making a lot of money. The fact that, you know, guys like him that are highly recruited coming out of high school, play at a major program like that, and then, you know, work themselves up to a top draft selection, you know, elite talent. I mean, I don't know. I can't put a number on it. Certainly it'd be in the millions. And, you know, for a kid that certainly, you know, you see guys now jump into Australia just to make a little bit of money before they go pro. It's a shame that they don't make any money like that, because definitely a guy like Zion could, he'd be a millionaire before he even went pro.
And I totally agree, wholeheartedly agree with everything you said there. I mean, I think he'd be one of those guys that can be rolling in the money before he even touched in a professional basketball court. But, you know, one person, there's a lot of people that are rolling in that money when it comes to free agent, when it comes to the NBA. And there's a lot of cats that got a lot of deals in free agencies. And a couple of them, let's start with a few people that you were kind of surprised got the bag like they got. I was kind of surprised at a guy like D'Angelo Russell, who got the max deal. I was also surprised that the numbers came out on Chris Middleton's deal, and that deal is like this, like the second or third biggest contract, or like I heard something like that. I was like confused. Like, Chris Middleton is good, but man, I was surprised by those two deals.
Yeah, Middleton actually, I mean, he was in the conversation to potentially get a 5-year max, just because Milwaukee was in, you know, the situation where, well, we can't afford to lose him. I mean, we're going to end up having to overpay this guy because we cannot afford to lose him. He's our second best player behind Giannis. And with Giannis's free agency coming up in 2 years, you know, we can't let guys like this walk. And he actually took less than the max. He got 5 years and about $178 million. He could have maxed out for 5 years at $190. So it was just under the max, pretty close to it. So he's going to be making about $35.5 to $36 million a year over the next 5 years. That's kind of where we're at. If you're, you know, it's an interesting discussion, because we put in these contracts in the CBA where, you know, teams, if you re-sign your own player, you can sign him for 5 years, and other teams can only sign him for 4 years. And that's supposed to encourage teams, especially small market teams, to keep their own players. But in situations like this, it kind of hurts, because, you know, if you come with a full 4-year max and you can offer more money than anybody else, well, that player, your hometown player, is still going to ask for five. And that's, you know, if you're a small market team like Milwaukee, maybe that's something you don't want to do. You don't want to do the whole 5 years, 180. You'd rather do a 4-year 130 and kind of protect yourself. So in situations like that, it's kind of hurting. Middleton definitely got paid. I was kind of surprised Harrison Barnes got $22 million a year from the Kings. I think he's a guy that definitely got overpaid. I thought he was overpaid on his last contract too. And I thought, well, the Kings won't make that mistake again. And they did. Signed him to basically the same deal, a little bit less. But yeah, there was definitely a couple head scratching deals for sure.
And talking to Greg Schwartz of the Bleacher Report on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And I think, you know, when you look at some of these moves, and one of the things that really struck me with free agency is, man, the 6 o'clock move, that 6 o'clock deadline changed it up a lot, man. Like, it seemed like people was just like getting calls like, hey, do you want to come or you don't? You got 5 minutes to decide. Hey, you want to come? Sorry, you don't. We offering it to somebody else. Like, it seemed like all the free agents was gone in like 5 minutes. Like everybody was done.
Yeah, I've got my phone with the, you know, the Twitter notifications on for like Woj and Shams and all these guys, and at 6 o'clock it just beep, 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 with all these deals, you know, being agreed to at that time. And you know, how many of these deals are done well before 6 o'clock when they're legally allowed to do? Probably a lot of them. I mean, let's not lie. Probably a lot of these deals are done ahead of time. But like you said, with these guys not getting a lot of time to decide, Enes Kanter was saying on Twitter how basically the Blazers called him and said, "We want you back. You have 6 minutes to make a decision." I mean, that's huge. I mean, you're deciding, you know, where you're going to live, where your family's going to be, where your kids are going to go to school. You know, you're weighing potential contracts from other teams. It's not like you can sit down and you have a night to decide on this, like, you know, the superstar players do. A lot of these role players, starters, bench guys, they don't have that time. It's basically like, you know, do you take the known deal that we're offering you, or do you kind of bet that the market's going to be good for you somewhere else? And I mean, that's, you know, that I think that's just kind of the business of it. Ideally, that's not how you do things from either side, but it's 6 minutes to decide, you know, you want this deal or do you want to take your chance anywhere else? And you have no idea what kind of contract you're going to get. It's crazy how it kind of goes down
at all. You just out here looking around. And a couple of people that don't look like they were looking around very long were Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Like, did it go down like this? The way I'm looking at it, did it kind of look like they was like, oh, well, we might go to New York? And then they were like, well, we don't like the Knicks in their roster, so we'll just take the Nets. And then just went to the Nets. They both took a little less, and they both end up in Brooklyn. And it's just like, wow, it just went down that easy.
Yeah, I think Durant was still a mystery leading up to it about where he was going to go. Kyrie could kind of connect the dots with him switching agencies and that agency's ties to the Brooklyn Nets, you know, their CEOs being twin brothers. I mean, you kind of saw, okay, well, it certainly looks like Kyrie's going to Brooklyn, but, you know, we didn't know that KD was going to go there, because Kyrie's the kind of guy where, you know, we don't know if he wants to still be the number one option on a team or if he's okay taking a backseat. We didn't know that at the time. I know there was one report out there that said Kevin Durant had been in contact with Kawhi Leonard about potentially going to the Clippers. So, I mean, there are certainly discussions from all these guys across the board. I still remember back at the trade deadline that or the All-Star game, excuse me, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving just seemed so friendly with each other. And I think Brian Windhorst said at the time they acted like a couple of middle school friends, just the way they were always hanging out and laughing and chatting. And you just kind of knew that relationship was there and that friendship was there. And they thought, well, you know, this is something that we can make happen. And, you know, it could have happened on the Knicks had they wanted to go there. You know, for Kyrie, I think he considers Brooklyn that hometown team. The fact that they used to be in New Jersey, he was born and raised in New Jersey, or born in Australia and grew up in New Jersey. That was an attractive destination for the two of them. Other teams could have been in play to sign both, but I think Kyrie, for him, wanted to go home, and for him, the Brooklyn Nets were the closest thing to that.
When you look at digging a little deeper with this Brooklyn thing, you know, you got Kyrie there next year, and he'll be carrying the load. How viable is the East now? When you say you look at you got Brooklyn, you got the Sixers, what they did. I think the Sixers are a really interesting team with getting Horford and signing back Tobias Harris. They got a different look roster now all of a sudden. With that team, I don't know if they have enough outside shooting, but what does the East look like when, you know, Kemba Walker and them going to the Celtics? Where do you have that pecking order in a couple years in the East?
Well, we got to find out where Kawhi Leonard is. Yeah. if he comes back to Toronto, I think you got to put them number one. You got to give them the respect, the fact that, you know, Kawhi's in his prime and Pascal Siakam's turning into a star. And you know, you hope the older guys, Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol, don't fall off the table too much. So if he goes back to Toronto, I think you still put Toronto number one. I think Milwaukee's still a close second, even though they lost Malcolm Brogdon to the Indiana Pacers. They brought back basically everybody else. they have the league MVP, so you got to put Milwaukee up there. Philly, I think it's going to take Philly a little bit of time, and I think they got to pull a couple shooters off the free agent market still, because it kind of confused me that they threw $100 million at Al Horford and then $180 million at Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris in today's NBA is not a small forward.
No.
He's a power forward, and so he's going to be forced to either come off the bench, and he's making $180 million, so he's not going to come off the bench, or he's going to play small forward on the wing, and that's just not a good spot for him. He didn't shoot it well from three after he was traded over there, and now you lost Jimmy Butler, the guy who had the ball in his hands at the end of games. You have a point guard in Ben Simmons that is, you know, he could be a superstar, but he cannot shoot from anywhere outside the paint. So who do you give the ball to in the last couple minutes of the game? And, you know, you've still got, you know, injury history for Joel Embiid. It's just a real – I look at Philly and I'm like, wow, this could be really good. Defensively, this could be a fantastic team. They just don't have enough shooting, and I don't know who gets the ball late in the game. So I'm a little bullish on them still. Indiana getting Malcolm Brogdon I thought was big. T.J. Warren, T.J. McConnell, Jeremy Lamb. I just thought they had some nice additions there. And Brooklyn obviously are going to be good next year, but in 2 years when they get Kevin Durant back from his Achilles, that could be the best team in the East. So I think there's probably about seven really good teams in the East, and then there's going to be a lot of, you know, the Detroits and the Orlandos fighting for that eighth seed that could still win 40 or 45 games.
And, you know, talking to Greg Schwartz of the Bleacher Report on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And I kind of want to delve into this thing, because I think people aren't giving this. There's been some nonsense going around in the state of Ohio. They're trying to throw, I don't know what they're doing. They're trying to throw water on the significance and the impact that Kawhi Leonard would have in playing on the LA Lakers. And I heard somebody say somewhere that it would not guarantee that the Lakers would be the favorite for the championship if Kawhi Leonard played with Anthony Davis and arrested LeBron James. I almost jumped out of my car. I almost stopped. I put my hazards on. And I said, do you understand? Did you not see what Kawhi Leonard was doing? I almost called you just for this. Could you tell? I want to hear your thoughts on the significance and what that team would look like from a standpoint, just basketball, of Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, LeBron, and whoever they can get off the scrap heap, J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver, because you know they'll come and they'll find a way there out the way to Staples Center.
As long as those three guys are healthy, it doesn't matter who they sign. Seriously, and they could still get DeMarcus Cousins. Danny Green hasn't made a decision. I think a lot of these guys are kind of waiting to see what Kawhi Leonard does. Somebody made a point. I was listening to a show the other day, and somebody made the point, like, take LeBron. Like, let's pretend LeBron doesn't play in the Lakers, and you put a Kawhi Leonard in his prime and an Anthony Davis coming up in his prime. You just put those two guys together, that's probably the making of a title favorite.
That's it.
And you're not even putting in arguably the best player in the NBA and one of, if not the best player of all time, who averaged 27, 8, and 8 last year and is coming off a season where he got an extra 70 days of rest in the summer. I don't care. They could sign Carmelo. And they would start him, and they would still be the favorites for the title. That's how good Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, and LeBron James are. And I think LeBron, he knows what he's doing. I mean, I'm sure they put this plan into place a year ago before he decided to sign with the Lakers. And, you know, they probably asked, you know, LeBron, if we could get Anthony Davis, if we could get Kawhi Leonard, would you be able to make it happen? Could you take a step back? Could you facilitate more? I'm sure he would be willing to do all those things to get those guys to come there and to match that playing style. It would be one of the greatest NBA teams we've ever seen if those guys are healthy. And we just came off seeing a Golden State team that was basically, I thought, the best I've ever seen with Kevin Durant and Steph and four All-Stars in 2017. So that I think this Lakers team might even be better just because that's how good Anthony Davis, LeBron, and Kawhi Leonard are right now.
I mean, you talk about the defensive prowess of Anthony Davis and Kawhi Leonard. I mean, they would have an elite wing in Kawhi and a rim protector. I mean, it would just be, you know, and like I said, it would be, it's daunting to think of the fact that the Golden State Warriors, to me, were the greatest team when they were up and running, that they were the greatest team ever assembled. But I would say bar none, that team and LeBron, I think he can average 12, 13 assists next year. I really think that he's going to come back really invigorated. Quickly question here, and we haven't talked about our lowly Cleveland Cavaliers. How does this thing work in the backcourt? Is Sexton and Garland, how does this thing work out? Tell me it's going to work. Please lie to me. Lie to me.
Well, I mean, the Cavs certainly think it's going to work. That was a hot topic of conversation when they had the draft press conference with Darius Garland there. Like, you know, they asked John Beilein, okay, who's your point guard? Who's your shooting guard? And he basically said it doesn't matter. You know, they viewed him as two guys that either one can play on or off the ball. They both can shoot. So certainly, you know, you look at Garland, then he's presumably going to be the better shooter. But Colin Sexton hit over 40% of his threes last year. I know off-season workout videos don't mean much, but the ones that Colin Sexton's been posting, he's been looking pretty good. I would be worried that neither of these guys seem like they're a real strong distributor. I know they're Darius Garland's college coach and the high school coaches and everybody that's been around him, you know, kind of rave about his playmaking and what he's capable of. And, you know, we don't know because we haven't seen him in summer league yet. We only saw him for four full games in college. But if he can be a playmaker and you can put Colin, you know, kind of as the shooting guard offensively where he can hit 40% from three and, you know, he's got a 6'7" wingspan. I think that kind of goes underrated in terms of a defender. And he's put on muscle this off season. We'll find out for sure how much on media day when we get a chance to kind of ask him and see him in live workouts and stuff. But I'm not sold on this pairing. Certainly, I thought Jared Culver was going to be the better fit. But I keep hearing stuff about that workout. He must have had one heck of a workout for when the Cavs flew out to L.A. to see him. And John Beilein just being completely blown away by him just not missing from all areas of the court. I think, you know, they probably made the smart pick. If you're a small market team and you kind of have to pick for the stars, even if it's not the best fit, even if you're in this rebuild, I thought they had a good draft. I'm not sure how all the pieces are going to fit together. That's for Beilein to figure out, but certainly they could come out of this draft getting three really good scorers on that team.
Hey, man, Greg, I appreciate you. And as always, great stuff. And we'll do it again soon. Thanks for coming on with me late in the barbershop.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, appreciate it, man. 216-578-0092 @GBush91 on Twitter.